Frank Reinstein and Mara Reinstein are here joining us, sharing their stories and background about 24 and in and around 24. Even though we're going to talk about 24, we're going to talk Michigan, because I literally can go out of my balcony and see the Renaissance Center and see Michigan, but I can't go there yet. So I am craving Michigan love, and we're going to talk Michigan. Sorry, Aaron.
The topic always comes up. Don't apologize this time.
We have to cover Michigan. We have to cover Howard Stern, and then we'll eventually get to 24 at some point. So welcome to the show. Thank you for clearing the time.
Thanks for
we
having
me.
Thank you.
Here's what's happening this week on 24 Universe, which Aaron is here with us from LA early in the morning.
Good morning.
And he runs 24 Universe. And all of a sudden, what popped up on 24 Universe about a little over a week ago was this picture of this video cassette, a VHS cassette, which usually
VHS, which some of you kids might not even know what.
But here's the thing:
gotta work it.
I don't get excited about seeing a VHS cassette online. Everywhere, right? Everywhere. Or at a pawn shop. However, what's on this particular cassette?
This one is like a specific shrine, especially to those fanatics like ourselves.
It is the Holy Grail. It is a good copy of the Star Wars Holiday Special. It's on par with those things. And you hold it in your hand.
Often so debated that, like, as Mara said in the group, that a keeper doesn't even think it exists.
Right. Like Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Yeah. Amen.
So tell me, please. First, tell us, how did you two meet?
I'll let Mara take that. She's funnier than
we
I am.
We met in my mother's womb in 1976. Frank and I are twins, and he lives in Michigan. Okay. I live in New York City. And that is how we met. He was basically the first person I met ever. So there you go.
That's awesome.
And wow.
In terms of the video cassette, I will tell you briefly the story was that Frank has a boring job. He's a CPA. I have a fun job. I'm an entertainment journalist. And I used to work at Teen People magazine, RIP, from 2000 to 2002, 2001. I came across a cassette of the original 24 pilot. I believe my memory isn't 100% on this, but from what I remember, my editor had it. Where at the upfront presentations, which is when all the networks reveal their fall schedules in May.
Okay.
After these presentations, the networks send the editors these rough cut copies of the pilots. They are not for review. What often happens is that some cast members get cut out or replaced until you actually see these episodes in September. So in May, this is in May 2001, my editor received all the VHS copies of the Fox lineup, and she wasn't really interested. It didn't really scream Teen People. So she gave me her VHSs, and I remember thinking that, or hearing that, there was a lot of buzz around this one pilot of 24 because it was gonna air 1 hour per episode, something very high concept at the time. And I held onto it, and at some point I gave it to Frank because I knew it sounded right up his alley. And again, this is May 2001. This is before everything. So
right, before the world changed several times.
Before the world changed. It definitely was not, oh my gosh, this is going to be a collector's item.
Right.
No way. It was just,
right,
this might
right.
be cool. This might be a cool pilot to watch. That's all it was. And then it became a collector's item. And then obviously 9/11 happened in New York, where I was. And the whole world changed. But Frank, if you can see from his background, is a collector, and he has he has everything related to sports and entertainment. And I don't know if I personally would have held on to that tape, but he held on to it, and that is how 20 years later it ended up on your Facebook group.
Well, twice a year.
That's pretty awesome.
Twice a year, I'll get a bin and I'll put it out in front of the house, and I go through and I get rid of stuff in the house because I watch, I read Marie Kondo, I read, tidying up, I read all those things, and I don't want to be that person at the end that still has this huge collection of stuff. So I'm trying little by little. I'm by no means a tiny house person, but I'm trying to get closer to that. So in the process, I've thrown out VHS cassettes, right? But Frank, you kept yours.
Yes.
Amazing.
God bless you for it.
What made you keep it?
I remember watching the pilot of 24 as it aired. Was it in November, I believe, of 2001?
Right.
So, yes. And again, let me just start out by saying this. There are much bigger 24 fans out there than me. I know that. I'm aware of that. But I remember watching
this. They're much bigger than us, probably.
Yes. So I remember watching it, and my sister came to me. It's like, oh, I have the pilot of it with the uncut. Because everyone knew that they cut a scene, obviously, because of 9/11.
Right.
And yeah. So, I'm like, oh, Q, send that to me. And very nonchalant. And I remember watching it. I've only watched it one time. That tape has never been watched again. Right after the pilot came out, and she sent it to me, and I watched it. I'm like, wow, this is really different. Not really different, but I don't want to get into the details, but it's different than what aired on the actual pilot. And something about me said, and again, by then, I remember 24, when it first came out, USA Today had a full spread ad of all these positive reviews of it. And I knew this was just something different and unique. So I said, yeah, like you, I throw out a lot of stuff, but I knew this was something worth holding on to. And to Mara's credit, this is not the first pilot she sent me. I actually have the original VHS pilot of South Park that she got way back in college.
Wow.
So these are like unique things that she sends to me, and I know that are different. And when she gives it to me, she's like, you got to protect us with your life, like Jack Bauer protection, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
right.
I tend to hold on to things and know where they are. And I knew it would serve some good at some point of time. I didn't know when that day would come until I happened to stumble upon Facebook listens to everything, probably. And I still love 24. And I saw your 20 years of 24 convention. I start looking at this and all these amazing guests. I'm like, wow, I have something I think. I didn't know it would be that big of a deal. I didn't know how rare the tape is that I thought would be interesting just to show off. Because we all love to see the reactions Facebook's going to give to us.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll give you a little clue onto the rarity. I mean, I've been into 24 has been my thing since November 6, 2001. Solid.
Okay.
I've gotten lots of people into it, and I know, and I've met lots of people that are already. I've never met someone who has seen the tape. It's like we were talking about before. It's to stupid 24 junkies like myself and Ryan and Justin and all of our little buddies. It's like the Holy Grail.
Yeah, because I wrote like you right after privately, and I said, "Listen, I don't think it's that big of a deal." I'm like, whoa, hold on.
Right. Yeah, I heard you. I was looking at it like, wow. He doesn't even. That's like
a I know what Jones I have. Okay, I know it was that big of a deal.
Here's what it was. It was a feeding frenzy because everybody jumped in. I was worried for you because I was like, you're going to be like, I'm going to get out of this group because everybody jumped in like, could you send it to me? Could you do that? I'm like, no.
I knew it was coming.
Everyone's like, make a copy of the DVD, sell it, and this and that. And I'm like, number one, theoretically, I had to talk to my sister because she's the one that gave it to me.
Yep.
Number two, and I put a picture of this. And again, I don't know the legal ramifications. I'm not a rich person. But as you can see, I don't really own this. I guess Fox still owns it. So I don't know. So I don't want to just dump it out there on YouTube and then everyone's going to copy it. And I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. The lawyer in me responded right away, don't do anything with it. Just hang on to it.
It's right here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of my
decision. I'd rather know where the shrine is than lose it forever.
Yeah.
It's in good hands. I keep a very safe house because stuff you see in the background.
Yeah.
I keep trying to see what it all is. I'm so curious. I'm a sports
fan. It's all baseball Hall of Famers. And I have a YouTube channel which I won't promote, so.
Nice.
You
won't promote? Why not?
I don't know what the rules are.
There are no rules.
Baseball,
we're going to talk. We're going to talk Mara movies. We're going to talk all that stuff today. It's not just
we'll get to it later. I don't want to base bore people. I'm sorry.
Any rules are yours to impose.
Yes.
No. I will say.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I will just say this. Like, as 24 grew and Phantom, it really exploded. I want to say, even Mara became the head. I don't want to step her shoes too much, but as Mara got promoted, she started getting more and more preview discs, which she would send to me, and I saved every single one, which I'm sure we'll get to later.
Very cool. No, those are you know, if you're going to hoard something, that those are good things to hoard. Those are good things to hang on to, for sure. Absolutely.
I love those little, I collect odd things myself, especially if it comes to 24, but like odd things at all, and just cool things.
Yeah,
and I just love that type of stuff. I definitely would have held on. Even if I wasn't me, if I was in your shoes, I still would have hung on to it because it's like, who has this, right?
Yeah.
So thank you both for preserving that and putting it into safe hands.
The old Wayne's World, we're not worthy.
It is the Cypress Recordings.
Cypress Recordings, that's it right there.
So Mara, you spent time during the 24 years talking to cast and crew and...
Yeah, so I moved on from Teen People in 2002. I started Us Weekly, and I was at that point 24 had aired. Obviously, it was the hit. I actually did not become obsessive about it until I was kind of like crushing/dating a coworker at Us who was obsessed with 24. So even if Frank really liked it, that did nothing for me.
Right.
When the office started liking it, and he lent me his, I believe, like his 24 VHS that he was something, or his DVD, something like that. And I watched it. I watched season one in like a night. I was so obsessed with it. I can't believe I looked this, you know, it wasn't just because I liked it, I genuinely really liked the show.
Yeah.
And then I was all in. And because I worked at Us, I had this amazing access, and I quickly began like pitching 24 stories. And yes, I mean, Us Weekly is known for Bennifer and Brad and Jen, but we had a really potent entertainment section where a lot of celebrities wanted to be part, you know, in the magazine because we were selling a million issues a week. And so we got access to everybody, and I became friends with the Fox publicist, shout out to Josh Governelli, and we became friends, and he and I would have long conversations about 24 on the phone. And he once sent me a present, and he said, like, his stationery was on, he sent me a note, a handwritten note with the present saying, "To Mara, the biggest 24 fan I know." And I hung up. He wasn't even, this is just the publicist. And I hung his like little note in my office on like my bulletin board, just because it was so amusing that I was now the biggest 24 fan that he knew. And because of that, yes, I wound up interviewing many people in the cast and being invited to all these premiere events. I went to the Intrepid in New York City for a 24 reboot party. If there was anything 24 related in New York or even in LA at some point, I was there for it. So I definitely took advantage of the fandom. And I did get a lot of promotional materials in the mail that I would pass off to Frank that he still has.
That's a good, my sister's not that nice to me. I'm going to say that right. I'm going to say that on public record. My sister likes me, but she's not that, you know, she wouldn't give that cool stuff up.
And Frank, why didn't you go to the Intrepid event? I remember inviting you.
I don't know. Unlike my sister, I am married and I have kids. And so it's just very difficult for me to go to New York. Of course, I regret it. But that being said, I think that was the reboot of 24, which
it was.
Let's be honest, it's a lesser 24. I'm sorry.
Right, it was the reboot of 24.
Are you talking Legacy or are you talking...
Legacy.
Okay, sure.
I do have that you did give me, and I don't know if I can get this all in the frame. This is the official CTU
24 the logo.
Sweatshirt with the 24 Legacy on it.
That's
one of the many things. So yeah, I wear this once in a while. I'm not gonna lie that I don't.
Yep.
People stop me first. They go, "Oh, is that the FBI, the CIA?" I go, "No, it's CTU." And the next question, of course, is, "Where can I get one?" I'm like, "You can't.
They don't exist."
So
that's the best answer to give, right? It's just like, no, you can't.
Yeah, and another thing, I mean, my sister gave me, this is from A Live Another Day. I don't know if you guys, I've worn this very actively.
Oh, yes, yes.
That's awesome.
So I have more stuff here I can show later. So
absolutely. That's, man.
So, this is all like the Fox promotional stuff. So that's awesome. I save everything. I'm sorry, let me adjust that. I save everything pretty much because I have a house. Mara's got a small apartment.
Okay, and a storage, you have a storage locker somewhere too?
I do not have a storage.
Okay, okay,
let me say this, Amara, you can correct me. I don't remember 24 sending out that much promotional stuff outside of the DVDs themselves until later in the run, original run.
Right.
That sounds about right. I think at some point, like, Fox was more flush with money for the show, and they started sending materials out, like, in advance of the season premiere to get everyone hyped for it. They would send these big gift backs packages. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, from what we've been told, you know, that as the seasons progressed and, you know, obviously more people were getting into it and binging it, then that's really the way the audience grew. Then they could find some more money to make some things happen and bigger explosions and that kind of stuff. But
Yeah.
Mara, what's the craziest or most cool thing that you attended with regards to 24 that you want, you're just like, how did I get here?
Well, definitely the Intrepid event was amazing. I guess it was for the reboot, but it was still with Kiefer. Kiefer was not there, but it was just still incredible. To this day, that was I've lived in New York since 1998. That's still the one and only time I've ever been on the Intrepid was for that 24 event. And the Fox had a party in the Santa Monica Pier, I want to say in 2007, for the Television Critics Association. And I flew out there for the party. That's when they gather all these critics together in the summer to get them hyped for the fall offerings.
Yep.
And at the Santa Monica Pier, it was like this beautiful night in Santa Monica, California, obviously, and all these stars of Fox were milling about. And Kiefer at that point was like at his height of popularity, where I would say he was the biggest star on any network TV show. Again,
definitely.
I think it's pretty fair to say he was, where he was really a rock star. Like, consider, like, this is post Friends, post Seinfeld. Like,
CBS
was like very adult skewing. So I for sure. Again, like The Office was just getting started. So he was definitely the biggest broadcast star. And he was like standing off to a corner. Mary Lynn and her fiance were there and I chit-chatted with them. And then Kiefer was like surrounded by security guards. It was like a very big deal that Kiefer was there. And again, Josh at Fox sort of like motioned me over like I was the king type of thing. And he was like, "You want to go meet Kiefer? Okay." And then motioned me over like no one was getting to Kiefer.
Right,
and
right.
I walked over to him. I remember thinking how short he was. And he shook my hand and he had like a very firm handshake. And I said that I was such a fan. And I said that I really liked his music because I knew that he would like that I knew his music.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So I said something about Jude Cole, who was his producing partner.
You know, Jude. Yep.
Yeah. And like, I mean, this was not my first time at the rodeo here.
Yeah.
So,
right.
This is during the Ironworks days too, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and he was like so geeked out over that. And it was maybe like a 60-second exchange, but I don't really fan out too much over celebrities, but I definitely remember afterward being like, I'm never watching this hand again. So that Kiefer shook my hand. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I mean, no, I did not. I don't do photos or autographs or anything like that, but just the handshake and the conversation was enough for me. And yeah, so that was really cool. Like I said, at that point I'd interviewed Mary Lynn a bunch of times. So I was like hanging with her like it was no big deal. But Kiefer was on another level. So
sure.
It was such a cool
Fox. But also, I should add that weirdly enough, I remember getting stuck on the Ferris wheel with Jolie Richardson, because Nip Tuck was still on the air.
Right.
So, Jolie Richardson and her daughter were stuck on the Ferris wheel with me and my friend at the top, and we were making conversation at the top of the Ferris wheel.
This is at the same event.
Same event at the pier. Nice. Like this carnival.
Gosh.
So I remember. Going on this meeting Kiefer and then getting stuck on the Ferris wheel, the same event.
So well, my other question was, what's the strangest place, your coolest place you wound up, not 24 related, but that sure sounds like that is in
yeah,
the
that's
top.
Close, yeah.
Oh, the coolest, I mean, I can go on for hours about cool. I've been very fortunate to experience a lot of cool things in my job. Getting stuck at the Ferris wheel is probably closer to the bottom of the list.
My goodness.
Kiefer was definitely more toward the top.
How about stumping the buoy?
Yes.
Where does that rank?
That's epic.
Yes, I was on the Howard Stern show almost 5 years ago to the day. That was easily my career number one best day of my life, being such a big Howard Stern fan and being in his studio and being interviewed by him live with Robin in the booth, and then having to do this game with Gary right next to me and then winning. It was such, and then taking photos with him. It was just like, honestly, the best day of my career ever.
That is so cool.
Let's be honest, the best day of my life. It doesn't get much better than that. I mean, you, at that point, you could have paid $100,000 to sit with Howard to do the news, and right. The money went to charity. But yep. I got on the old-fashioned way, and I didn't have to like strip or do anything weird. I was just listening yep. to 80s
right.
music. And I also remember just being in the green room, and they had my photo and name on the green room as if I were an actual celebrity.
Wow, that must feel so good.
And being in the green room, like all this amazing food in the green room, and then I was too nervous to eat. And then
sure.
afterward, yeah. I had to sign all the tax forms, and there was this giant cinnamon roll, and I stuffed my face with the cinnamon roll. I was so hungry and so happy. And it was like the best tasting cinnamon roll of my entire life. And they gave me the big check, which still hangs in my apartment, and the big awesome. Novelty check for $5,000, and just Frank flew in and just walking through Midtown holding this big Howard Stern check. I mean, only in
that America, is so right? cool.
Only
what a story that is.
I know. And then I came back to my office at Us Weekly, which is like four blocks away, and then went back to work. And it was just like, I didn't happen. But it was
typical day.
Leading the check up in the office, right?
Yep,
you know?
Yep. Well, that's
Mara.
You
know, how does
I have to disagree, Frank? I'm loving this podcast. This is definitely yeah. not the bottom of the barrel. I'm loving it. I'm having so much fun.
Mara, how does one prepare to face the king of all media?
Well, Frank was very helpful. Frank actually, who helped me, was the one who got me on the air, because he wrote a email to Jason Kaplan, the Stern producer, saying that my sister Mara would be great on the show. And I had to try out over the phone, and I missed one of the questions, and I didn't think I was going to get it because I missed one of the questions. And then I wrote Jason an email being like, listen, fingers crossed, you never know, but thanks. Either way, this was fun even trying out for it. And then I remember him sending the email saying, your dreams have been answered. We're going to put you on the air. I think Howard will like mixing it up with you. And
sure.
like, what? Howard like mixing it with me? And so I prepared, like, Frank helped me do a Spotify list. And Frank found all the old Stump the Buoys of what I should know. And
right.
I really prepared. When I was a kid, I was really into the spelling bee. And I remember like having to study a lot for the spelling bee to win the spelling bee, and like lists of words that I would study. It was the same thing as this, where
wow.
lists of songs that, I mean, I had some blind spots, and I really wanted to win. Obviously, I did not want to embarrass
right, right.
And I knew doing the pre, one of my friends happens to be a producer on Stern, and he had this was just a coincidence. They happened to be the producer. Yep. And he interviewed me for the pre-interview, and he said, Mara, just so you know, no one thinks you're going to win. And it's just going to be fun for like Howard to talk to you because you work for Us Weekly and he loves celebrities. And that's only that's it. Like, no one thinks it. But so you've got your work cut out for you. And then even on the air, Robin said on the air, it's going to be Gary's going to beat you. Like, you're not going to win. Came off like this girly fangirl we were talking about my love of Luke Perry and 90210 and
right.
Seriously. And so I surprised them by winning. And so not only did I get to be on the air, but I got to all the stunning and all the years of listening to Casey Kasem paid off.
Right.
And it was really amazing. And what's crazy was that I got so much feedback from fans. Like hundreds of people reached out to me. Like, people who I met one time in my life reached out to me. Friends, boyfriends, ex-boyfriends reached out to me. I got dates from it. I like dated a guy who listened from it. One time I went to South by Southwest. This is a true story. I went to South by Southwest a year later. I was sitting by myself waiting for the movie to start, and a guy comes up to me and he says, "Excuse me, are you the one who stumped the buoy?" I'm like, "What?
Oh my God!
Even on video, like, how would you even know me?" And he said, "I saw your name." Yeah. So
was it the T-shirt you were wearing that said I stumped the buoy or no?
That was not it. That was not it. As a matter of fact, I was talking to like a writer from The Hollywood Reporter, and I'm sure he thought that he was The Hollywood Reporter and I was just Us Weekly. And then afterward, he was like, "Who are you?" and was like, "Excuse me." So yeah, it pays dividends all these years later. I have it in my Twitter bio because it's so... Anyone can be a movie critic, but not anyone can stump the buoy.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
That's absolutely true. So I will never erase it from my Twitter bio. And even Gary, and I've since gone on to work for Sirius. I am on Sirius every Monday on Sirius XM Volume, Channel 106. And they always used to introduce me as like, "She's the one who stumped the buoy." I really feel like I got my job because I stumped the buoy back in 2016. So it has paid dividends professionally, personally. Every single person wants to know what it was like meeting Stern. And sorry, Frank, I'm kind of sort of hijacking this, but
no, you're good.
Credit, two more things. Number one, he wrote me a thank you note. I wound up donating the money to Beth's animal rescue charity, North Shore Animal League. So he wrote me a thank you note, and so did Beth, which was so nice.
Wow.
And
then that is totally cool.
Yeah. And then afterward, Frank, who flew in for this, and my friend, the beauty editor, came in and did my makeup for it. And they came in the studio after I'd won, and I'm geeking out, and Frank is geeking out. And I take a photo with Howard because they want to put it on the website. And then Howard says, "Come on, let's go. Let's do a family portrait." So Howard invites Frank to sit on the couch, the famous purple velvet couch. Right. And we take a family. Frank and I take a photo with Howard Stern. And it was, I think Frank would rank that moment like maybe higher than his wedding day. I don't know. But
below the kids being
she said it.
But the photo is on my parents' mantle. And my parents are very like Midwest conservative.
Right.
Howard Stern. Like they never want us to watch MTV back in the day. So they they never got it. But I'm like, "Mom, Dad, you don't realize this is the best day in Reinstein twin history. Like, you don't even understand the importance of this day that we got to meet Howard and we earned it."
That's right. He probably had a little more credibility because at that point he was AGT Howard Stern, right? So the transformation of his, you know, acceptance into everything else was kind of mid, right in 2016, really.
Oh, for right. sure. But just the fact that, you know, in the dressing room, there's photos of him on the couch with all the celebrities. I remember looking at a photo of him with Madonna. Madonna had just been on. And now I'm like, what is happening? We are taking the photo in the same position as Madonna. And I look, the photo of me, and I mean, I'm smiling. Frank is so, it is literally like a wedding date. It was really an amazing day. Well,
Mara, I would have crumbled after 5 minutes of just being in that room. You held it out for more than a half an hour. You held your own. You said something. There's one point where you said,
have you ever seen the reviews?
What,
like,
enough?
They're like a paragraph.
Excuse me, Gary.
70-word review.
Excuse me. Obviously, you've not read the magazine.
I have.
It's a full.
It's what?
The trash talking is starting before the game begins. I don't like this.
I'm like, yes. Because most people will get in there. Like me, I would have just been like, whatever abuse, it's the Howard Stern show. I'm going to take it, whatever. And you were like, just make sure you say my name right. Like right off the bat. I was like, that's amazing.
Howard mispronounced my name. And he was like, Mara. And I'm like, no, that's my number one pet peeve is the mispronunciation of my name.
Let's introduce Mara to the audience. Hi, Mara.
Hey now, Howard, can I just... It's Mara, not Mara.
Mara. I'll call you what I want, like bone Mara. That's right.
It's going to kill me if I hear this back and you don't pronounce my name right, because it's my dream to be here. I knew I could never listen to this show back if I was just hearing Mara. My college graduation, they pronounced it Mara, and it was my own professor, and I ruined my college graduation. So I'm like, I'm not ruining my one shot. So I corrected Howard. It became a running joke. And after that, I felt like liberated. Because once Howard on a pronunciation, anything goes. So yeah, I was all in.
Yeah, you did what most people wouldn't have done. They would have just let him say their name wrong. But good for you. Oh, I love that story. That's awesome.
In addition to, I'm sure I would have forgot every song I'd ever heard at that point. They would have played a little ditty, and I would have been like, "What was that? What's music? What's going on?" Yeah, absolutely. That you won on top of all that is.
Yeah. No, it was muscle memory. I mean, I really did know the songs. Yes, the studying helped, but I mean, this is years and decades where Frank and I would be like a car listening to the radio, and we would play the game in the radio, just being like, can you name the song in one note? And so, yes, like I said, it's my stupid human trick to the world.
Yes, that is awesome.
And a great one at that.
That is awesome. Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
You're my people, because as I said, I miss Detroit so badly. There may be news coming Monday about the borders reopening.
Wow.
I've had my second shot, so I'm ready to, like, I'll literally be sitting at the tunnel ready to go.
I go to get my second on Monday.
Nice. So I may camp out at the tunnel on Monday night if I can go over to Detroit on Tuesday. There's several things I missed.
I know you're telling the truth too, Ryan. I know you're not exaggerating a bit.
Not at all. No. Detroit, Frank?
Yes.
How is it doing?
I'm still here.
Yes. How is Detroit? I miss it.
Detroit's doing great. I think not much has changed since they closed the borders. Oh, God, it was a year and a half ago.
Okay.
So Tigers still stink. Pistons still stink. Everything's still bad.
You know.
Yeah.
And what part of Michigan did you grow up in? Like both.
We grew up in Southville, Michigan, and we moved to Farmington Hills, Michigan. If you're familiar with that, if I put my thumb up like this or like this, it's like right here.
Yeah. Farmington Hills, Livonia.
Yes. My wife works in Livonia.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. What's the best place to see a movie in Michigan?
The best place to see a movie in Michigan would be to travel outside of Michigan. Probably. The best was the Henry Ford has a beautiful IMAX theater.
Yes,
but
I
unfortunately,
agree.
They no longer show first run movies there. I don't know why.
They don't?
I remember seeing they shoot such like Mission Impossible there, The Dark Knight there.
I saw
so
Dark Knight
a
there.
Big action packed movie came out. That was the place to be to see the movie, and they just shut it down. And the sad thing is also we had past tense a great independent movie theater that's been around since the 40s called the Main Art Theater.
Yes,
and they just closed that theater down last week as well. So it's not really a good time to see a movie here. A matter of fact, Mara was here last year. She spent some time here, and Tenet was trying to have its big comeback, and the theaters were closed. So we drove down to Ohio.
Oh, okay.
To see it in a quality theater. But there's not even a real IMAX theater here anymore in Michigan.
Yeah. Did you? Oh, you're right. I didn't realize IMAX wasn't doing first run anymore, because I've seen several.
Oh, no. IMAX is still doing it. The IMAX that Henry Ford, though, is no longer doing it.
Right. Wow. Mara, what is there?
That sounds
is there
so
a great...
crazy to me from Los Angeles, where it's like you can't turn around. You know that you can. There's IMAX like everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah. But they just closed up the ArcLight theater there in LA. I'm very sad about that.
They did that. There's so many theaters when something a good one, reputable, legendary piece like that kind of closes down. It's like what's going on?
Okay, so here's I'm jumping into this question. Then I'm going to ask Mara the same question. You saw Tenet last year.
Yes.
Was it everything you hoped it was going to be?
Of course not. It was too loud, too confusing. So I think most Chris Nolan movies, and Mara could have a better say of this than I am, are meant to be seen at least twice on a theater.
Yes.
Once just to see it, and then once more to understand it.
Understand it.
Have to say, I did see Tenet again, obviously, and I enjoyed it much more the second time than
I did
the first time.
Me too.
So I think that's true with almost
I'm
all.
I'm still waiting on my second watch, but I know that's going to be the case.
The second viewing for me was exactly what you said, Frank, because I took my wife to see it, and I was like, we're going back into the theater again, and we're going to see a movie. And then I was like, halfway through, I was like, oh, I wish I could stop this and rewind it, and because I'm lost already, and I don't get lost during Christopher Nolan movies.
No, neither do I. My sister and I are pretty good. We actually saw it together. And I think part of it was just this. Okay, we saw it like an almost IMAX theater, and it was so loud, the background, that you really couldn't understand what they were saying. And this is not a spoiler, but they talk backwards in some of the scenes.
Yeah.
So I'm what is going on? So I'll let Mara expand on that, though.
We saw it. It was our first time back in the theater, but this was in August, I want to say, of 2020. It was very strange. We had our masks on, and then the movie, they have masks on, and it was odd to experience it like that.
I agree.
And these were the hardcore masks, right? Because this was last year. I was disappointed, too. I remember being very lost. I was really hoping that this would be the movie. I'm a movie critic. And I was really hoping this would be the movie to get people back and get people excited, and it was the wrong choice. I'm glad that he took a risk and that Warner Brothers took a risk, but it was so inaccessible to the casual movie fan who didn't know what they were watching. I have not seen it the second time. That goes to show you how little desire I've had to try to understand it. It being like way too esoteric for me. I like the first scene at the opera house, I'm with it, and then I wasn't with it, and then it just never got me back into it.
And I'm a huge fan of John David Washington. And
I am too, and Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth DeBeck. They had a great cast, Kenneth Branagh.
They had a great cast.
It was one of his lesser efforts for sure.
Which leads me to what you do. Which leads me to what you do. MaraMovies.com is a great. How did you start that?
Oh God, I was a movie critic for Us Weekly starting in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I got laid off from Us Weekly. I didn't know what to do. Two publicists suggested that I start a website for movies just sort of show that I'm still in the game.
Yep.
And I did it over the summer of 2017. And what happened was that Us Weekly hired me back as the movie critic after I started the website. So we still review movies for Us Weekly. They're mostly in print. People still read magazines. Occasionally they'll go online on Us Weekly. And they're also on Mara Movies, so people can still – it's sort of like a portfolio / movie review site.
Nice.
Right, I do a top 10 list. I'll do the summer. I do movie previews. I'm not as active on it as I normally am because I have so much other work, but I also teach a lot of blogging classes. I'm a writing instructor as well. I wear like 1,000 different hats. So it's important for my students to see that I maintain my blog. So I don't let it go to waste. And so I still have the site up and running, Mara Movies. And then again, like I said, every Monday at 5 p.m., channel 106 on Sirius. You can also hear me review movies and TV series that have a music element because Volume is the all-music channel. And I do that with Alan Light, who is the former editor-in-chief of Spin and Vibe, work for Rolling Stone, and Mark Goodman, who is one of the original MTV VJs. So it's really a treat that I get to do that every Monday.
That's awesome. Man, that's really cool. Is. And we can find all that through MaraMovies.com?
Yes, you can, except for the series, which is subscription-based, obviously.
Right, yes.
Yeah. And that, yes, but that, please, it's on demand, and it's channel 106. You can find it also on demand on the Sirius app.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Again,
that's so cool.
Yeah, that's what's your favorite movie? Both of you, the question for both our guests today.
Mine's very easy. Mine has always been Back to the Future. I was like, Aaron asked me that question, and he couldn't believe that I answered Back to the Future. I thought it was such a disappointment for him. It doesn't mean it's the best movie I've ever seen, but it's my favorite. I loved it. I saw it in the theater 3 times when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like knocked my little socks off. I thought it was
same.
It was just like, it was the coolest movie I'd ever seen. I loved Michael J. Fox. I interviewed Michael J. Fox last year for the first time.
How's he doing?
And oh my gosh, talk about being nervous before an interview. Like my teeth hurt. I was
sure. So yeah.
And he could not have been nicer and more patient. I didn't geek out at all, but I did have an old Tiger Beat that I held onto from 1988, and I held up the Tiger Beat to show him because it was a Zoom interview, and he was very amused that I still had a Tiger Beat.
I mean, of course, he was polite. He's Canadian.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
Exactly. And I'll give anyone who's in New York a little fun fact is that he has a bench named after him in Central Park that his wife Tracy Pollan gave to him for his birthday, and it says Mike Fox and Gus, true New Yorkers, and he told me exactly where the bench is in Central Park, and after the interview I went and found the bench and I sat down on it, and
that is neat.
It's Michael J. Fox's bench in Central
That's
Park.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's yep, awesome. I saw Back to the Future on opening day. And I remember walking out of the theater I sat at the bus stop, just kind of stunned at what I had just seen. No, was it the greatest movie of all time? But at that time, for me, it was the best thing I'd ever seen.
Thank you, Ryan.
When I was a kid, when I saw it, it was definitely the best thing. I didn't see it opening day. 10 years as a junior. I was born in 78. It came out in 85, right? So I was a kid. Saw it on VHS. Yeah. When it released, and that was it. How do you feel about the sequels as well? I was wondering that when you said Back to the Future.
They're watchable, but they're very problematic. I mean,
of course,
they're not this. Like, there are some sequels that are so bad where I choose to think that they don't exist. Like Legally Blonde 2 or Major League 2, where I'm just like, they don't exist. There's only one movie. But I mean,
there's one Major League. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I choose to believe that the other two movies exist. They're not that bad. But they're just sort of.
They're
like,
not the first one. That's very true.
No, they're not the first one. Yeah. They're fine.
Frank, what's your favorite film? Thank you, Mara.
If you go on one of my websites and they ask you what your favorite film is for like a password, I always put Die Hard. I'm not saying it's my favorite film, but it's one of those films I could watch over and over. Whenever it's on, it doesn't turn off, even with commercials. So
it's got action,
comedy, great one-liners, and it's led to so many other genres. I mean, like Speed, Die Hard in a Bus, Die Hard in a Boat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It all goes back to Die Hard.
Well, arguably, it led to 24. I mean, really?
You can make an argument that it'll let
there's an argument.
It's a great argument.
Yeah,
and it's funny. My sister gave me a Die Hard coloring book. It is the funniest thing.
Oh my God.
It's an unpaid promotion. If you can, sure, you can buy it on eBay. I don't want to give it away. It is, it's a coloring book. It is the funniest book you will ever see. Just to give something away, they have pictures of all these shoes, and it says, circle the two shoes that match. And no two shoes match. He says, John McClane didn't have two shoes that match, so neither do you. So it's like the funniest. So
that's awesome.
It's a really funny color.
That is awesome.
Love to peruse your collection, man.
I mean, speaking of collection, I want to go over a couple 24 things that we're running out of time.
Please do. The time is
these
yours.
This is all courtesy of my sister. So, like I said, once she started becoming a TV movie critic, friends of the PR, they sent us all the 24 discs. So it's interesting. Like, so I have all the season premieres that were given to the critics. They all have numbers on them, so they can't, if they got out, they would trace it right back to my sister. I'm sure this is the only one that exists. This is the season 8 premiere. And I'm sorry, my headphones falling. What's interesting about this is my sister gave this to me after season 8 came out, so it's never been opened. So it's still sitting in its protective disc as well. I know when 24 was coming to an end, they sent my sister, who sent this to me, and I've seen them on eBay. They're not impossible to find, but this is a piece of CTU. I don't know if you can see that or not. Some artwork. Yeah. And it's still in the original shrink wrap, which is starting to buckle a little, of all the season artwork for all the 24s with the original season of 24.
Wow.
So that's another cool thing.
So cool.
Fox sent my sister other stuff, which of course I had on. I had, right after 24 was House. I loved House also. I loved Gregory House.
Right.
Yeah. And so I had that. So again, premieres. Cool thing about House was this was a, it looks like obviously a thing of blood. But in the back, of course, is the DVD of season 2 of House.
That is so cool.
Okay,
so
they could spend the money on House.
Yeah, they had on House by then. But by then they had money.
When we open the museum, Frank, we're coming to knock on your door.
I'm happy to donate
when we open that museum.
At the end of House, they gave this. This was an X-ray from the season of House as a commemorative gift.
Cool. Wow.
And finally, if we have time, my sister just sent me something yesterday to show how much money has gone into promotion since this started.
We have as much time as you need.
I sent it to the.
This is. My sister got this, not me. Should we open it and see what's inside this?
That's the greatest lunchbox ever.
Are you kidding? Yes. Oh my God.
Okay. Opening it.
Just to be clear. Just to be clear.
Me and Ryan just are giddy through this whole thing. Me and Ryan are like, oh, that's cool.
But just to be clear, I thought my sister and I were friends until this podcast.
I'm calling her after we get up. I'm calling my sister, and I'm like, you know, I really thought you were a good sister.
I questioned.
I was wrong. Take a few things from here. So
I did. I took a few things.
As you should. So,
We've all watched Loki, right?
Okay,
so here is a TVA folder with we have a letter in here. Should we read the letter or no?
Don't read the letter.
Don't read the letter. I will not read the letter.
Okay. There's a letter there. Right.
There's a letter in there. Going deeper
into
the box.
Mysterious letter from the TVA.
we have notepad saying everything you've said, and there was a signature line, and it said from the first episode, obviously, and it says what on here.
That's so cool.
That's incredible.
We have tape dispenser with the TVA.
Very nice.
We have a stapler from the TVA.
This is too neat, man.
I think that Disney company's going to take off one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're headed in the right direction.
With this kind of marketing, I think they're going to do great.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
You got to put it in the drawer.
Right, it will not be open. Yeah, it's worthless. So I grew up at the TVA, so it doesn't give me any powers. But yes.
Right.
The Tesseract. We have a little Loki pen.
Sweet.
We're not done yet, though. I want to save this for last.
Right.
What else do we have here? Of course, we have to have TVA socks.
Nice. Oh, you need the TVA socks.
Yes.
I feel like you're going to take Tom Hiddleston out of that box.
Tom Hiddleston is not in the box.
All right.
The last thing is, again, this is from yesterday. Oh, besides, the most recent episode is a TVA jacket.
Oh, cool.
It does not say variant on the back, though. It says TVA.
Is that a rain jacket, too? It doesn't say variant.
It is a rain jacket, yes.
Oh,
wait, you want to know what I took from that box? Hold on, I'll show you.
Absolutely.
And Frank, do you plan on wearing that out?
No, but my son may wear it. It's funny. Some of this stuff I know is collector's items, like the piece of CTU, the piece of the X-ray from House.
Right.
Those go in my personal collection. I don't open them. But what am I going to do with a piece of clothing?
Clock.
Oh, hold on.
The clock.
You got the clock.
Man. So cool.
Yeah. It's the one thing I took. Oh, and a mug. I took the mug and the clock.
My sister gets this stuff all the time. You don't realize this.
I get it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. No, that's
awesome. I got my personal Converse shoes for the new Punky Brewster remake.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that they're mismatched. Like, I get really cool stuff.
Was Punky Brewster
on social media, though? It's a little tacky. So I
would love to know what's your take on social media on Punky Brewster, the reboot.
It was okay. I mean, I love the original.
Yeah. I thought it was all right.
I've yet to see it yet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Punky Brewster! They went so all out for that promotion. They
really.
I can run upstairs,
They sent like a painting kit to me, and I did it with my niece, Frank's daughter, who's 8. When I was in Michigan, and like there was like a painting party, and they sent us snacks and wine, and Soleil Moonfry herself led the painting party. So did like a portrait with Soleil Moonfry where you can ask her questions. It was just the coolest thing. And this was just for the Punky Brewster, which on Peacock. I mean, this is where it gets where like the promotion.
Yeah.
If it's your thing, it's really out of control. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of journalists who post it on social media, and I find it really unprofessional. Honestly.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially because I'm a member of the Critics Choice Association and the Hollywood Critics Association, and you vote on things. You don't want to look like it's a payola thing where you can get bought. And
right. Stuff. Yeah.
I try not to publicize it. That's why also kind of why I hand off a lot of it. So,
So
there you go. But it comes to my niece and nephew and obviously my brother.
Oh, those are unique experiences. Frank, you made the Howard Stern Show happen.
And
your sister got you all that cool stuff, which now makes me question my relationship to my entire family now.
Mara won't admit this, but I gave her like a lot of tips, like Stump the Bully, ask him to play a song twice, ask him to play the song longer if you don't know it. I feel I helped a little bit to help her win. So I hope she gives me a little bit of credit for that. But no, at the end of the day.
Yes. Sorry if I did not give you.
It's fine. No. Mara did all the heavy lifting there. I just got her foot in the door.
It's the twin advantage.
Apparently, one of the songs, as my friend was in the green room with Frank, like Frank thought I didn't know, and he went crazy, and I did know it. So yeah,
For the record, that song was "Freeway of Love," and everyone knows "Freeway of Love" in Detroit. And the opening notes went on, and I'm screaming "Freeway of Love," and Mara goes, "Can I hear a little more?" I'm like, "What? How do you not know 'Freeway of Love' being from Detroit?" She got it right. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, she was bluffing.
It all worked out.
She was bluffing. Well, this has been a real pleasure. I've never had a podcast that started with a video cassette before, a VHS video cassette, and we've never had siblings on. Usually there's one fan in the family, 24 fan in the family, but we've got a family that has two. So again, it has been a pleasure to have you on. And
thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Guys. Bye.
Typical barrister.